Paratāya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Yasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanasantatami Bhagavad-gītē bhavad-dvaiṣinī. Karmanāya-vahisam-siddhim āstitā-janakādayah Astita janaka deha lokasangrahame vapi sampashyan kartim arhasi Sandhi. Karmana eva he samsiddhim Astita janaka adiyaha loka sangraham eva api sampashyan kartum arhasi. After really explaining so much about Karma Yoga to Arjuna in verse 19, he ended that section saying, you know, therefore do always unattached Karma Yoga Buddhi, keeping unattached. May you always just do those karmas that are to be done, the Karya Karma, the Nitya Karmas, those things that are brought before you, that come before you, that are your duty to do. Always do that. Then, because asaktaha hi acharan karma param apnoti purusha, because the person who does karmas in this way, that person gains moksha. Right? Because even though the karma itself doesn't give you moksha, it gives you the antikarana shuddhi, the karma yoga. For an ajnani or samsari doing karma, they're doing karma so that you can't, because you want something. You do the action because you want a particular result and you're attached to the result because your ananda, your fullness is dependent upon that result. That's just karma. That's how we live our life, how samsari lives. A mumukshu, it's much different than that. For the mumukshu, a person, the end goal, the end objective is antakarana shuddhi. So in fact that I'm free from needing the results of actions to make me happy. That I become free of needing any particular type of pala or any particular type of gain. Because I'm seeking moksha, I'm seeking liberation. So for me, for the person who's the mumukshu, who is now working in the world, doing actions, doing the karmas that are meant to be done, even doing actions for which I have a desire for, whether they're karya karma, the karya karmas are those karmas which are I'm required to do, they're my duties. And then there's the karmas, the kamya karmas. I want this and I want that. Those karmas also are there for the karma yogi, for the one who still has the ahankara. Right? I still want this to be happy, or I still need to do these duties. The ahankara is there. But for that person who has the karma yoga buddhi, means that I do all of those actions, but not with an attachment to the result. It doesn't mean that I don't know why I'm doing the action. I'm doing the action for a given result. But the attachment is not for the result, because the attachment is to moksha, is for gaining the antikarana shuddhi. That's where really the attachment is, if you want to look at it that way. And so that for that person, asakta, unattached to the karmapala, I do these results so that I can gain the antikarana shuddhi. Because if I'm free to do the results, and if I receive the effects of those actions, the results of those actions, with a prasada buddhi, as coming from the Lord, as coming from Ishwara, my mind becomes connected to the world in a different way. I'm now connected to the world as Ishwara, and I'm connected to the results of my actions as gifts from Ishwara, as being received as prasad from Ishwara. And that gives me a totally different type of mind, which we call prasada buddhi. That type of mind, we have a name for it, prasada buddhi. We name it like that because when you... What type of buddhi do you have when you're at the temple receiving prasad from the Lord after the puja has been done? That's the prasada buddhi. There's no resistance, there's gratitude, there's appreciation of the Lord, whatever it happens to be. And so that gives a certain freedom of mind. That freedom of mind is what the shanti that gives, is the antakarana shuddhi, the shanti itself. That is the antakarana shuddhi that allows this mind to gain knowledge, because the mind becomes a receptacle, right? It becomes something that's available for this knowledge. It's not that it's some special type of mind. It's that the mind becomes unencumbered and free enough to be present to this knowledge. But otherwise, it's out running around trying to solve its problems and fulfill its desires. So it doesn't have that shanti to allow it to be present to this knowledge. So he says, so keep doing karmas, keep doing your karmas, he tells it to Arjuna, because Arjuna still is a karta. That's the key right there. He doesn't have jnana nishtha yet. The karta means he's a doer. Kriya, to do. Right? Karta. Nominative singular from kriya becomes karta, nominative singular. Okay? So one who does, a doer. Kartritva. If I say kartritva, doership. He has kartritvam. Doership, right? The Swamiji says these words kartritvam, bhoktritvam all the time. Doership, that tva affects, kartritvam, bhoktra, doership, enjoyership. So he's a doer and enjoyer, has doership and enjoyership. So Arjuna's in that situation. He's a mumukshu who's trying to gain this knowledge. The ahankara is still there because the knowledge hasn't completed itself yet. So in that situation, what should he do? Continue to do his duties. Continue to satisfy his desires as long as they're kaushalam, means as long as they're dharmic, if they're done, fulfill his desires properly, but with that prasada buddhi, which gives the mind the shanti that's required for this knowledge to take place. So that's what he said. Now, he says a few other things that are important here. He's going a little bit into a different way of dealing with this now. So he says, Janaka and others. Janaka was a kshatriya, famous king, right, who was considered to be a great jnani. So in the days of old, Janaka from the Bhasha, Janaka and others, right, are great kshatriyas who were considered as wise men. Janaka and others, some siddhim astita, They strived for moksha. They went after moksha. They wanted to gain moksha. Karmana eva hi. And with karma, through karma alone, they never took sannyasa. That's it. Janaka, through his entire life, he remained as a king. He gained knowledge. He had jnana nishtha. He remained within the sphere of karma. He never renounced the karmas to become a sannyasi. So Janaka and others, they strove for and attained this astita. They made their efforts for and they attained some siddhim. There's some different levels that will work with this verse, like as Shankara does. Through karma alone, karmana eva, karman, karmana, instrumental singular, through karma alone. Then lokasangraham. Lokasangraham means the protection. Sangraham means the protection of the people. Protection of the world means the protection of the people. Also the protection of the people, sampashyan, seeing that clearly, karatum arhasi, you should be able to do the protection of the people. You should be able to protect the people through your karma. understanding this clearly. Because he's going to get into more unfoldment here, but let me just say a few ways of looking at this verse. If you say, there's three ways. Janaka himself was considered as a great jnani, a wise man, who remained ruling the kingdom. So, never having taken sannyasa, he stayed within the world with that karma yoga buddhi, doing karma. He stayed within the world doing karma. He gained jnana-nishtha. He became a jnani. Right. Like that, you also can do that to Arjuna. Right. Staying in the world with karma, doing your karma, you also can become a jnani. You don't have to take sannyasa to have jnana-nishtha. So that's a very important thing that's actually being said here. Right? Right. So another way of saying it. Before Janaka was a jnani, had the clear vision. Through karma, he stayed in the world doing karma. And through that karma, he gained the antakarana shuddhi, which allowed him to become a jnani. Just different ways, different levels of interpreting the verse. Okay? Or, say you never become a person's not a jnani. Then through karma, staying in the world, right? Staying in the world, they do those karmas that are meant to be done, protecting the people. Then you can say, that's a little different. Then you can say, let me read this for now. I forgot exactly how Shankar said it here. Okay, say you say that the karmas that had to be done, the karya karmas, the karmas that had to be done that were duties, those were done by Janaka and others previously when they weren't jnanis. Okay, not being jnanis, those karmas were done. When the karmas were done, had the karmas been complete, having been a person being a jnani, now the person is jnani, they no longer have to do any karmas. Say if you say that. Say Janaka didn't have knowledge, he was struggling for knowledge. He had to do the karmas. But once he gains knowledge, he's not bound to do any karmas. You could say that. This is about now. You could say that. Yeah, Krishna will say, or Shankar will say here, you can't say this. You can't say this, and this is why, and it will develop it more in these verses. Doing karma or not doing karma has absolutely nothing to do with being a karta. The fact that you're a non-doer, that you are free from doership and bhoktrittvam, has nothing to do with doing or not doing. It has only to do with the knowledge that you are a karta and a bhokta, that you are not a doer, that you are not an enjoyer, and that you never have been, and that you never will be, and that no amount of action or enjoyment or activity in the world will ever make you a karta or a karta or a bhokta. Because you are, by your very swarupa, free of kartritvam and bhoktritvam. That's the truth of it. And so now, here you are. Whether you're here as a sannyasi, you know, as a renunciate, or you're here as a karma yogi, or a person living in the world, you're here as a householder, or you're here as a great king like Janaka, or you're here with a person with tremendous amounts of responsibility, or you're here as a businessman or woman, in whatever way, or here as a family person, whatever way you're here, because of the prarabdha karma, the exhaustion of the prarabdha karma is why you find yourself in the situation that you find yourself in. Right? Whatever you happen to be doing, the jnani is the one that knows. Doing, I'm not doing. Hearing, I'm not doing. Hearing. Seeing, I'm not hearing. I'm not seeing. This can be easily misunderstood, right? Because then you'll see people misunderstand this and then they think, oh, this person is seeing, but they're not really seeing. That's not the idea. It's the conscious being that I am, this me, my own presence, right? Which enlivens the eyes. The eyes see, which enlivens the mind. The mind thinks and the mind feels. But the me, my presence, is not ever doing anything. It's never modifying or changing in any way. So I always am exactly the same. I'm not a doer. I'm not an enjoyer. If you say you're an enjoyer, then when something happy happens, the self becomes happy. When something sad happens, the self becomes sad. That would be an enjoyer. If something agitating happens, the self becomes agitated. The self never becomes happy or sad or agitated. It always remains as it is. Its own swarupa. So my being is always the same. So doership, enjoyership has nothing to do with me. Now that being so, here I am in this upadi, in this body, mind, sense organs, in this world. I am in this world where I'm, whether I'm in that world as a sannyasi or as a householder or a king or a person with tremendous responsibility, whatever it may be, here I am in this world. What should I do now that I'm here in this world? If there's anything for you to do, now we'll look at these other verses. If there's anything for you to do, it's loka sangraha. You do what is good for the people. Loka sangraha is the protection of the people. For instance, if you read, you should read Swamiji's commentary. It's really beautiful, and so is Shankara here. You should do what is loka sangraham. For instance, say you recognize yourself as free. Free from kartritvam, bhoktritvam. And so whatever things are there, what difference does it make? Whatever things are there to do, whatever responsibilities are there to do, what do I care? What do I care? Because my being is not being fed by these activities. My being is not being improved by the activities. It's not participating in the activities. I'm not becoming happy or sad whether the activities go well or not. So why don't I just, you know, let it all go? Say the king says that. You know? Say the mother says that. The liberated mother. The liberated father. You know, I'm free. I don't have to do anything because I'm free and I'm a kartan bhokta. So you all do it and just let me be. Right? So here, what Krishna will be saying in these next few verses is no. What your behavior has to be in keeping with your responsibility because you set the example. You have to set the example. Right? Say, if you're a king speaking now to, he's speaking to Arjuna especially, but just think of it, you are an example to whatever people are dependent on you or look to you. You're an example to those people. Arjuna was a great example. He was a great archer and a great leader and looked up to as the leader by hundreds and thousands of people. Right? As a dharmi, he was looked up as a kshatriya and as a dharmi and a protector of the people. That's how he was viewed. Krishna also was viewed as a king and a great protector of the people and as a dharmi. Right? Krishna, of course, has knowledge. Krishna is the Lord incarnate. He's an avatar. You know. And so, what should his behavior be? What should his drishti be? How should he view his position in the world? Because he's a great avatar, he's Ishvara incarnate, but he's incarnate here as a king. And right now he's incarnate as Arjuna's driver of the chariot. Right? And so what is his responsibility in that situation? Is to follow the Dharma and set that example. of doing what is right in the situation. And he says to Arjuna also, it's loka sangraha. You do what is appropriate in the situation. That is your dharma. In terms of yourself, it doesn't make any difference one way or the other. Yourself isn't doing anything. And so yourself is not going to be hurt by what you do or what you don't do. Therefore, what should you do? What is the proper thing to do? Loka sangraha, the protection of the people, right? Protecting the dharma of the people. Janaka and others lived their whole life doing that. Because of his prarabdha, Janaka was a king. He never left his kingdom. He spent his life ruling the kingdom. But he was considered a great jnani. Like that, you spend your life now, you do this loka sangraha, because as a kshatriya, like with Janaka, that's also your duty. Right? So then he's going to go on. So let's do the next verse. He explains it more. Yad yad acharati shreshtaha, yad yad acharati shreshtaha, tat tadeve taro janaha, tat tadeve taro janaha, sayat pramanam kurute, sayat pramanam kurute, lokas tad anuvartate, lokas tad anuvartate, yet, acharati shreshtaha tat eva itraha janaha saha yat pramanam kurute lokaha tad anuvartate. He says, whatever a shreshta does, shreshta means an exalted person. A person of responsibility, a person who, a shreshta means an exalted purusha, exalted person, like for instance a king or a leader or somebody who's looked up to by the community is a shreshta. So any type of person who has responsibility in the community. So whatever that person, that exalted person, shreshta, if you think of it, a person who's revered, a person who's looked up to. So yet, acharati shreshtaha. In whatever way that person behaves, acharati, in whatever way they behave, yet shreshtaha acharati, tat itraha janaha, that the others follow, right? She says, yet, tat itraha janaha, that way is the way the others behave. Acharati is shared by both. Yet, acharati shreshtaha, tat, acharati itraha janaha. It's that way, the way in which the exalted person behaves, that's the way that the other people will behave, you know. And there's a lot of stories like this, but especially in the guru-sisha relationship also. The way that Swamiji behaves, you know, that's the way that students will behave. It's even true in terms of dress. Like if Swamiji, the way Swamiji wears his outfit, when the sannyasis take the outfit, they almost all wear it exactly. They wear it that way, you know. Certain picking up, and it's not just, this is true all over the world, not just Swamiji, I'm just using this as an example. The way he may laugh, that's the way others will laugh. Because, you know, there's the way he behaves. He becomes, and those are just simple, silly examples. But the way that he treats others, those are the values that are imbibed by the people that look up to him. Right? So he holds the dharma. He's an exemplar for the dharma. That the people who look up to him then will behave in that way. It's just how it is. We always follow those who we revere. Yeah. And then say, if you take it more into a secular, in the workplace, it's a trickle down. The way the managers or the people who are administering their value system, the way they treat those who are underneath them, or the way those people treat others also. So it's just kind of a natural human nature. And so here, of course, Arjuna was a person of a lot of responsibility, and so is Krishna, as he'll mention to Arjuna in a minute. But he says, whatever the behavior is of a Shrestha, that's what their behavior will be. Sayat pramanam kurute. Whatever the pramana is, whatever he makes as a pramana, the Shrestha, makes as a pramana, means whatever he makes as authority or sets as a standard. Pramanam means authority, but it also means like that we think of the Vedas or the different means of knowledge as pramana, but it also means authority or standard. So whatever he sets, whatever standard he sets, so sa yet pramanam kudate, lokaha tad anuvartate, it's that standard that the people will follow. Anuvartate means to follow. That standard they follow. And so, let's read the next verse because these kind of go together. Name parthasti kartavyam. Name parthasti kartavyam. Trishulokeshu kinchana. Trishulokeshu kinchana. Nanavaptam avaptavyam. Nanavaptam avaptavyam. Varta eva cha karmani. Varta eva cha karmani. Na me parta asti kartavyam trishu lokeshu kinchana. Na anavaptam avaptavyam. Varte, that A drops there. Varte eva cha karmani. He says, hey Partha, it's a name for Arjuna. Na me, for me, na kartavyam, kinchana. There is nothing to be done. For me, kartavyam, there is nothing to be done. It's Krishna talking. So, hey Partha, for me, there is nothing to be done. Na kartavyam, kinchana, nothing. Na kinchana, nothing. Kartavyam, there's nothing to be done. Trishu lokeshu, in all three worlds. Among all of the people, it means in the for all of the people in all of these three worlds, for me, there is nothing to be done. Then he says, na anavaptam avaptavyam. There is nothing which is not attained that needs to be attained. It goes, anavaptam, not attained. Avaptam, unavaptam. Avaptam, attained. Unavaptam, unattained. Unavaptavyam. There is nothing to be obtained. Avaptavyam, that needs to be attained. Right? Nakinchana. Nothing that is not attained that needs to be gained. Varte evacha karmani. Yet I remain, varte. I remain engaged, is the idea. I remain in the midst of all of these karmas. I remain engaged in karma. Even though in all of the three worlds there is absolutely nothing to be achieved by me, there's nothing that needs to be gained. There's nothing that's not gained that needs to be gained because I'm the whole. Right? That's Krishna. I am the whole. I am all of this. There is nothing to be gained. I already am the whole. Nothing to be achieved. Right? In the entire universe, nothing at all to be achieved. And yet, look at me, he says to Arjuna, look at me. I'm totally engaged. I'm always very, very much involved in karma. And he was. He was a great king. He had a family. You know? He had a family. He had wives. He had a brother. Very much involved in ruling his kingdom. And also in being kind of the great uncle to Arjuna and to Duryodhana, always acting as a mediator between them. You know, he was a very, very active person in the world, always engaged in karma. And yet, there's nothing at all for me to gain here. because I already am the whole. So he says, look at me. Let's do the next verse. Yadi hyam na bharateya, yadi hyam na bharateya, jatu karman yatandritaha, jatu karman yatandritaha, mama varatma, mama varatma nivaratante, manusha partha sarvashaha, yadi hi aham na varteya jatu karmani atandritaha mama varma anuvartante manushaha parta sarvashaha. He says, Krishna now still explaining to Arjuna, yadi hi, because if aham na varteya, if I should not be engaged, jatu, at any time, if I should not be engaged karmani, in karma, if I should not be engaged in these karmas, atandritaha, carefully, vigilantly, carefully means consciously paying attention, if at any time I should not be engaged in these karmas, doing them properly is the idea, vigilantly. Mama vartma, my path, anuvartante manushaha. The people would follow my path, my example, right? Sarvashaha, in all kinds of ways. Okay. Sarvashaha means in many different ways, right? Hey, Partha. If I were to slack off, this is what he's saying, if I were to slack off and not do the karmas, not do my karmas, not being engaged in my duties, fulfilling them properly, diligently, then what would happen? This path, the way that I've chosen to be, right, all of these people, anuvartante, will follow. They'll follow. Anuvritti means, anuvartante means to follow. They'll follow my path. Aparta, sarvashaha, in so many ways. They'll follow the example that I'm setting. Right. Let's do the next one. Because it's one copy. Utsi de yuri me lokaha. Utsi de yuri me lokaha. Nakuryam karma chedaham. Nakuryam karma chedaham sankarasya chakartasyam sankarasya chakartasyam upahanyam imah prajaha upahanyam imah prajaha. He says then, doing that, having set this example, right? Utsi deyuhu ime lokaha. These worlds means these people. Loka means people or worlds. Often we use it for worlds, but here just people. Ime loka, these people, utsi deyuhu, would be destroyed. These people would be destroyed. Vinashyehu, these people would be destroyed. Nakuryam karma chet aham. If chet, aham nakuryam, if I do not do, if I should not do these karmas, these people would be destroyed. Sankarasya cha karta, I would become a karta, someone who causes this sankara. Sankara means a total breakdown of the caste system, a total breakdown of the order. If we think of caste system, the marriage system, the way the whole order, the way the whole Vedic tradition works, I would cause a sankara. Sankara means like chaos. Would cause all kinds of intermarriage and chaos. There would be nobody upholding the Dharma. So I would become a sankarasya chakarta syam upahanyam ima prajaha. And would become somebody who is destroying these people, right? Because of my example. So, we'll do one more and then I'm going to talk about this a little. Saktas karmanya vidvamsaha. Saktas karmanya vidvamsaha. Yata kurvanti bharata. Yata kurvanti bharata. Kurya vidvamstata saktaha. Kurya vidvamstata saktaha. Chikirshurloka sangraham. Saktaha karmani avidvamsaha. Yata kurvanti bharata. Kuryat vidvan tata asaktaha chikirshuhu lokasangraham. He says, hey Bharata, just as people in the world, just the regular people in the world who are attached to karmas, being avidvans, just as people in the world who don't have knowledge, they perform karma being attached to the results. I perform these actions so that this will happen and that will happen. So I perform an action so that I can get the fruits of the action. So the avidvans, the people that don't have knowledge, that's how they behave in the world. So just as they do, hey Bharata, may you, being one who has knowledge, you, having knowledge, be asaktaha, one who is not attached, and may you desire to do action, lokasangraha, for their protection. Right? Just as people in the world, the people in the world do actions in order to gain a certain result. May you, being one who has knowledge and not attached, may you also desire to do action. But what is the action that you should be desiring to do? Lokasangraha. Do those actions which are for the protection of the people. That should be your drishti. And so what is good for the people? That you do. Because for you, for the jnani, it doesn't matter. It's not like you're going to be benefited one way or the other. So then what should your drishti be? What should your vision be? It should always be, what is good for the people? What is good for the world? What is good for the Dharma? What helps others? What is the behavior that helps others to grow? What is the behavior that others can emulate for their own well-being? That may you do that. And so, now we'll go into another section. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.
Could you talk about the three worlds and the three sources of karma?
Oh, by the three worlds, it can be three or more. You just say the three lokas, bhur, bhuva, suvaha. These are just three terms that cover the whole universe, so all beings and all worlds. Okay. That's all what it means there.
Okay. And what's exactly the three sources of karma? What's meant with that when they talk about the three sources of karma?
Of karma?
Yeah.
Putra, it's usually the children, putra, wealth. What are they?
The
Arjas,
the
Purusharthas?
No, not the Purusharthas.
One is putra progeny, one is wealth. And I don't remember what, there are three, I don't remember what the other one is. Where are you seeing it?
No, that's just...
Because, I mean, there's a whole Sanskrit term for it. I just can't think of it right now. Yeah. But one is
it's one of the prayers. I just forgot actually where it exactly is. But
you mean the three kind of the kamya karmas, the three things that a person desires?
No, I think
progeny wasn't one.
Progeny is one. Wealth is one. But that's not what you mean.
I see where the context is exactly. Yeah, I can't remember.
The other thing you might be thinking of is the nitya and naimittika karmas and the kamya karmas. The nitya karma.
I checked it out. I really can't tell you right now. I just thought that's something common that you know, but obviously there's a reference point missing. So
okay.
I have to kind of look for that reference point.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But that's even true.
That's true.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because say you're not as a jnani, the upadhi is not free from dharma and adharma and the results of your action. If you're a jnani, you put your hand in fire, it'll burn. If you're unkind, your mind will, you know, react to the unkindness. Just like a samsari, the only thing is there won't be build-up on it. That's a great freedom. There's not build-up. One of the things for a jnani or somebody that even has some maturity in light of your knowledge, normally you have a reaction to something. Say somebody hurts your feelings. Something, you lose something, whatever it is, you have a reaction to something. And then there's a build-up on the reaction. It's kind of like somebody steals my money, mm-hmm. so I feel sad the money's been stolen, and then, okay, that's over. But no, it's not over. Why did that happen to me? What did I could have done this, or I could have done that? There's a whole reaction upon reaction upon reaction. Right? And so say, once you... That level of reaction can be eliminated. You know, you might have the initial reaction, and then that goes on. That's why they say sometimes for the jnani, the mind's kind of like riding on water. You ever heard that? Or a bird flying through air? Because it doesn't leave any tracks.
But why would that just happen automatically? It doesn't seem to me that it would happen sort of automatically for a jnani. I mean, maybe a jnani who...
Antakarna Shuddhi. Because, well... What do you know? What is your knowledge? Mm-hmm. What knowledge does the mind have? That yourself is the source of ananda. Never changes. Nothing ever happens to you. And so if there's something that goes on in the mind, it goes on and then it goes. Because there's not a build-up.
Mm-hmm.
But why isn't there a build-up? Because the mind has its nishta elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like it has its value elsewhere. What is the value? In the wholeness of my being. Right? And so that's where the mind is rooted, that's where it clings, that's where it always goes back. That's why there's that one story that sometimes Swamiji tells. I don't know if I can tell it well or not, but there's a sea captain and his family, his wife and children and or out to sea on a ship, something like that. And he's waiting for them to return. And somebody comes and tells him, your wife and family and your ship, the ship itself and all of the riches, everything on the ship, including your wife and family, the ship itself, has sunk. It's gone.
This is Shakespeare.
Is it?
Go ahead.
And the captain goes, what? What? So what? What? So what? That's that riding on water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still remember that phrase. What?
So
that was the only thing is when we say so what, the problem is that Swamiji saying so what in Indian, it's different than if we say so, because if we say so what, it's so what? Yeah, it has that attitude.
Yeah.
But this isn't how he means it. Mm. What? What? So what?
Mm.
You know,
it's
like
a shift.
It's a shift.
Yeah.
Right? He said it's a shift.
Right.
You know? So.
Yeah, he'd go on and on with that story.
Yeah, well, he doesn't tell that anymore. I haven't heard that story
but,
for a long
time. You know, that
time.
Story stuck from 20 yeah. years ago. It just stuck and never went away. All, a lot of other stories went away. But.
Could you say
what?
Could you say something about Jnana Nishtha?
Jnana Nishtha, yeah.
What that, you know, in the dictionary is actually, it says abiding in the knowledge free from thought. But
free from what?
Thought. So because how
no.
can you
that's not correct.
Knowledge free from thought?
No. Bad definition.
Yeah.
But what it means, Nishtha is that, the example we use, it means firmness. The example they use is say if you have you have a post hole.
Mm-hmm.
You stick the post in it, and then the post is, you can shake it.
Mm-hmm.
You stick more and more earth in the post until finally you can't budge it. That's Nishtha, where nothing can budge your knowledge. It's that firmness. So it's firmness of knowledge. Knowledge which is firm. Steady. Nothing can shake it at all. That's Jnana Nishtha.
Okay.
And so say for the person who has Jnana Nishtha, where is the ahankara? When you say I, where does it land? What is your self? In the Atma.
Yeah.
And is the Atma never changes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not happy or sad, or you're only you. What you are is what you are, and that what you are is always the same. Right? And so, say the mind goes through something,
mm-hmm.
you know, but no matter what the mind is going through, you're the same. And then what does the buddhi do with the mind, to the mind, or how does it respond to the mind that has just had the shock? That's okay. It brings that mind back to the reality.
Uh-huh.
It brings the buddhi brings the mind back to its vision. It brings the experience. It brings the knowledge to that experience, just naturally, because the nishtha is there. If the nishtha is there, then whatever the experience happens to be, then the buddhi, that experience takes place with the buddhi, right? And then the buddhi is just frames it within its knowledge. And that knowledge also, the framing that the buddhi does, do you know what I mean by framing?
Yeah, reframing.
Yeah, reframing, yeah. Well, I'm saying framing now, because reframing would be more like karma yoga. The reframing isn't jnana nishtha, because
uh-huh.
there's nothing to reframe, because uh-huh. the, right?
Yeah.
So you see it clearly. Something happens, then the buddhi sees that. It frames it naturally in the light of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now also, that's all vrittis.
Mm-hmm.
But those vrittis are taking place in the aparoksha jnanam of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your being that you are is the reality is never changing. So it's not like the buddhi is convincing anything. The buddhi is just a statement of fact. The framing is a statement of fact, which is aparoksha. You know what I mean by aparoksha? Aparoksha means because yourself is consciousness, it's its own experience. It doesn't need the mind or the sense organs or the world
mm-hmm.
for it to shine.
Mm-hmm.
It's self-evident.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The problem is for the Ajnani is that self-evident me is superimposed on the mind and the body and the sense organs. It's all confused. This is what we call anyonya abhyasa, this mutual superimposition. It's all confused. But for the Ajnani, it's not confused. So this self-evidentness of myself is just the ongoing reality of me. And the buddhi has total clarity about me and mitya. Right? The whole thing is just very clear to that buddhi. And so whatever experiences come or whatever shocks or jolts or whatever come, they come into that buddhi, which is kind of the so what.
But if you don't have jnana nishtha, you might have to, like the buddhi may have to work a little harder.
If you don't have jnana nishtha, then one part of the mind is going to go a little more, and the buddhi will go, no, no, it's okay.
Remember that thought that doesn't move?
It makes the pulse rock a little.
Yeah.
And then
you have to reframe.
Yeah.
You have to reframe.
So then the buddhi does a reframing, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't have jnana nishtha, the buddhi's reframing your misconception. If you have jnana nishtha, it just comes into the proper frame.
Okay.
That's nice.
So the aparoksha comes in exactly where? Can you see?
Oh, yeah. Let me give a context for it. When we talk about the means of knowledge, we have two words that we'll say. Pratyaksha means sense perception. Mm-hmm. Right? That's a pramana, pratyaksha. Mm-hmm. And pratyaksha means, aksha means eyes that stand for the sense organs. It means eyes or sense organs. Prati means around. So it's in the vicinity of the sense organs. So that's, pratyaksha is direct, immediate knowledge through sense perception. The word paroksha means away from the sense organs, para, away from the sense organs. So that's indirect knowledge, like knowledge of China or something that's away from me. Mm-hmm. So sense perception, pratyaksha, paroksha, indirect knowledge. A paroksha, the a negates the paroksha. So it means not indirect. Right? Paroksha means indirect knowledge away from the sense organs. Aparoksha means not indirect. Why do we say it? Because self-knowledge is not pratyaksha. You can't gain self-knowledge through sense perception. But yourself is not away. Right? It's not paroksha. You can't have indirect knowledge of yourself. And you can't have knowledge of yourself through sense perception. Mm-hmm. So what do you call self-knowledge? Aparoksha, not indirect. Because, and see, this is so critical to Vedanta, to gaining this knowledge, because right now, with or without knowledge, yourself is self-shining. It is its own experience. When you say, I am, I exist, and when the mind is labeling you, I am, I exist, I'm a conscious being, it is labeling consciousness, the consciousness which illumines the mind. It's not the mind illumines the consciousness. The consciousness illumines the mind. So that's self-evident. But the problem is, the mind is ignorant, and so it takes that self-evident consciousness to belong to itself. And so knowledge has to come in and make you able to differentiate your being, the self-evident awareness, from the mind and the sense organs and the thoughts, and to be able to recognize that steadiness of self, which is self-evident, that is not being illumined by anything, but is the very luminary of everything. Right? So that's aparoksha.
So who recognizes the aparoksha? The aparoksha is just there, right?
Well, when we're talking about it in terms of gaining knowledge, how are you gaining that knowledge? What type of knowledge is it? It's aparoksha. So we use that word in reference to how we're gaining the knowledge. What is the means of knowledge that is being utilized there? If we're talking about the self, we don't really say aparoksha. We say svata siddham. Self-evident. Siddham means swetas, self, siddham, self-established, self-evident. Or swaprakasha.
No.
These two words. Swaprakasha, self-luminous, swetas, siddham, self-evident. How do I gain knowledge of that? Not through the sense organs. I mean, we look at the different pramanas, the means of knowledge. You can't gain it through the sense organs. It's not indirect, but it's aparoksha, immediate knowledge that takes place through the shabda pramana. So we use these shabda means through words, through the use of words, as the Upanishads teach them. So anyway, this word aparoksha is a word that's used when we're talking about the means of knowledge.
That's good.
Now I could say right now yourself is known to you because it's self-evident. It's aparoksha. There's nothing If your sense organs aren't making you know it, it's not away from you, it's self-evident.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. You know, Carol, how you said
that's beautiful.
When you talk about, sometimes you say the self like this. No, let's say the self isn't really located
mm-mm.
in the body. You know?
No, I should say the self.
No, but it actually seems sort of appropriate, you know, because, I mean, it kind of seems like the self is in the body, but then I know that really it's not, that the body's in the self, right? Everything is in the self, and yet...
You have to remember that the self has no time or space, like what I did with the meditation.
Right.
But they say when they teach meditation, where to place the mind, where's what they call the sthana.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the sthana for the sthanam for the self? And they'll say right here. A little bit to the right of the heart or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because where...
Well, that takes it out of the mind then, doesn't it?
No, but where's the mind? See, we think of the mind, Westerners will think the mind and the brain, but in the East they don't. They think of the mind and the heart, you know? The heart is the locus of the mind, which is very nice when you think about it.
Yeah.
It certainly softens. Because actually, where is your mind? The mind is, I mean, all of this is mind, right? Where is your mind? So we think of the mind only in the brain, right?
But it's very very subjective, actually.
Because even if we guide a meditation, like we could also have you put yourself on the top of your head or between your eyes here, between your third eye and all of that. But it's just often, this is the sthana for the ahankara. And another thing we'll say is, when in meditation, like say if we do this adding up 5 + 4 + 6 - 2, you need to look at where that addition and subtraction is taking place. Where is it taking place? And wherever that is, that's where you put the mantra. So you're locating it somewhere. The self has no location, but the self has no time or space. But it has nothing to do with location. Right? But then the mind has to do with location. The words are coming and going. Where do the words come from and where do they sit? From where do they rise? Where do they sit? So you can also do that. You can follow the word as it ends. Like say if you say Om, where does the Om come from? Where does it resolve? That's where you put the mind. They're just techniques.
Well, why is it so important to displace the notion of I in the heart rather than in the mind?
I don't know that it's important. Just softer.
Yeah. Well,
but you can place it here in the third eye, or you can place it above your head. I mean,
Swamiji is...
Yeah, in your belly, you can put it anywhere. Swamiji used to have us put it above our head.
Yeah.
And that's a very powerful meditation, actually, because it just breaks it out of the body.
Yeah.
I have a question. Can you talk about the word... Loka,
sangraha means protection, loka of the people. You can say of the world, but what they mean of the people.
It means protection?
Yeah. Sangraha, the protection of the people. And then when Shankara comments on it, he says, to keep the people on track, dharma, so that they don't go unmarga. Unmarga means to go in the wrong direction. So to keep them within dharma is loka sangraha.
So
to protect the dharma.
So we first get ourselves on track, and then when we're on track, then we have other people to stay on track, basically, right? It's kind of like that, huh?
I think it is like that. I think even without knowledge aside, I think that it's like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's also...
I think it works negatively, too.
Yeah.
As we have seen.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? That's why he's Shankara. I mean, how many verses has Krishna spent on this? 5 verses or something? And it's also obvious, but it's nice to hear it said. It's saying what you know to be true.
The only way to experience being is experiencing your own being. I mean, your own personal, you know, it's your personal being, which has to be the same as being that everybody's.
Your personal being is Brahman.
But then, like, you know, if I look at those books, then I know they are being, because it is, you know, they have the isness. Then, I mean, in a sense, in the mitya reality, then you don't experience your personal being in the mitya exactly, right? I mean,
you have to look at it more like this.
Okay.
Here's this three-dimensional room that includes space. Space is part of mitya, right? So the dimension itself is part of mitya. Like if you close your eyes and imagine a room, you're creating dimension in that imagination. Okay? So whether it's in your imagination or actually perceiving this room through your sense perception, there is only one experience of being, and nothing is away from that experience. That's all it is. There's not an objectification of being. Mm-hmm. There's only being.
Mm.
And nothing in your experience is away from that.
Mm.
But you are that being.
Right. But if you know that, to know that that everything that appears to the senses, and is therefore mitya, is also shares your being, or comes from your being, or has the same being, it's your being. Right? Then the only way to kind of know that, it seems to me, is just logically, sort of.
Sort of, but not exact, not completely, though.
Mm.
Because, first of all, once you know, this drish, and all of these exercises to make you decathect consciousness from your body, mind, sense organs, so that you recognize that this me, this self, is not contained. That's experiential, right? Now, if it's experiential, you recognize that the me, the conscious being, is not contained, then what is away from it? And even experiential right now, what is away from that me once you decathect it from your body, mind, sense organs? You recognize that the me is free of time and space, really, and there's nothing away from it. Okay, so now, not only does this body enjoy me, but the entirety of my experience enjoys the me, the self. Okay, then you can say, yeah, but does, maybe, how can I know that from its own standpoint it doesn't have some other me, some other consciousness, or some other being? Well, because you can't find anything in the world. There is no object in the world to have being. Right?
But that's a little bit where I don't quite understand, because then we go, it is, it is, it is, and it seems to me the is, that's the being. So
yeah,
it does have being.
Yeah, no, I was going something differently.
Oh, okay.
It's true. There is nothing that, everything is.
Yeah.
But you should say it like this, maybe. Everything am.
Right.
Because there's no objectification of is. Is and am are identical. You can't project is into an object. The is experience is the am experience. There's no independent is experience.
So you can't say there's a being in the books. That's already like a superimposition kind of thing.
That is. It is. But while you do that, if I say like, all of these things enjoy being.
Uh-huh.
Okay? But the being that they, because it is, I is. So all, the whole thing enjoys being.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the being that it enjoys is asanga.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything here that I say has been, then I have to look and see if that thing is.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find the thing isn't. The thing is infinitely, the thing itself has no being. Apart from the being.
Right. But
so
the being
existence.
But the being is.
So existence originates from beingness, then. Is that.
Existence is beingness.
Yeah.
Not originates from, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of these things that we say, oh, this has been, this has been, this has been, what we end up saying, yeah, but is this a thing?
Right. So none of them have separate being. It's right. All the same being.
Yes, and that being is not objectifiable.
Right.
So your being experience is the only being experience there is, which is which is self-evident.
Right.
It's not something that we can project or look at. It's something which nothing is away from. And then you try to find something out here as having a separate being, and there is nothing out here.
So my personal sense of being is not non-different. If it's one, then it's non-different than your personal sense of being. There's no separation.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, even when you say non-different, just say it is.
Mm-hmm.
Your being is.
But I always, you know, still though, you think that there's space or there's a separation.
That's right. That's because there is.
How do you
overcome that? Right. There is a separation within duality.
In the physical plane.
But there isn't in beingness.
No. There's no separation in beingness.
So how do you handle that? Then when you see the separation,
well, that's
and
the whole
know
point.
And know it's not true. You know, is that?
You have to understand the different levels. Like there is true separation between this body and this body and this rug and. There is dimension within, you know, this mitya. Within empirical reality, there's dimension. But the truth of empirical reality is paramartika satyam. This is called vyavaharika satyam, empirical reality. Paramartika satyam is being itself. That's why the dream or the imagination example is so powerful. Because that is what, if you can think of your imagining this room, the relationship between awareness to the imagination, the awareness to the three-dimensional reality of your imagination is the same as the relationship of awareness to this three-dimensional reality. And it's experientially the same. See, because this whole room, even though I'm perceiving this room through my sense organs, right, there is nothing in this perception that is away from me. I am its being, and that is my experience. Now, if you have an imagination of it, you just know you have nishta. You know that I am its being, right? Because you're the Ishwara of that. You're all knowledge. But here, you're not the Ishwara of this room. You're a jiva within the room, right? So Ishwara doesn't have a problem.
But it's actually the same thing.
Right? It's the same thing.
That's so amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. But in one, you get to be the Ishwara, and this one, you're the jiva.
And maybe it's confusing, too, because it's the mind that recognizes the self. You know, it's the buddhi. And every buddhi is individual. And so, so the buddhi recognizes the self. And so... So that's kind of funny in a way, because the buddhi is part of time and space and nitya and all that.
That's right. That's the jiva. Uh-huh. The jiva is the one that has... See, Ishwara doesn't have a problem.
Okay.
The jiva within Ishwara has a problem. Now, in your imagination, you as Ishwara have no problem. But if somebody within the imagination, they're going to have a problem. That's the jiva.
But I think maybe even like trying to get like what Edward was talking about, like the ear me and a mind me and aren't different means. Because it's initially, I mean, the buddhi recognizes, it's the buddhi that makes that recognition of the self. And so it's still an individual mind that's recognizing that self. And then...
But then now, that individual mind has now got to recognize itself and the environment in reference to that self.
Right, right.
And see its place in the environment in reference to the self.
Yeah.
That's why the aparokshatvam of the self, the self-evident nature of the self, is so important.
Yeah.
Because if that's realized, the buddhi understands that, then it can place itself in Ishwara.
Yeah.
Right? And placing itself in Ishwara, it kind of looks around and recognizes, wow, I'm also Ishwara. I'm also part of Ishwara. And my being is the self of this whole. And then you say, is that my experience? Well, yes, it is, actually.
So I'm just another object in this work.
Your body, mind, sense organs is part of Ishwara. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And your being is the self, yeah.
So you're basically saying in a moment where this understanding comes to a certain kind of, develops this kind of momentum, this certain kind of threshold where the whole thing actually, where the reframing, so to speak, basically just kicks in that shift. You know, so there's a certain kind of momentum of understanding that we're actually building up here, and then there's got to be some kind of shift at some
point. The mind, see, for a while it'll be the mind has questions, has doubts, and then it needs to solve those doubts. It'll go to the teacher to solve the doubts. Then what happens is the mind has doubts and it blah, 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 solves it itself after some thought. Then after a while, the mind has a doubt, and as it has the doubt, it has the solution, sees the solution. Mm-hmm. Then after a while, it doesn't have any doubt because it only has the solution. It only has the understanding. So when that understanding is complete, then there's no reframing, there's just framing. Right? Because it just sees.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And before this, constantly adapting.
Adapting, working out.
Yeah.
Thinking it through. Seeing, well, what about this and what about that? It's shaking the post.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Until the mind has to see. Nobody else can do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all Purvapaksha Siddhanta and Satsang and unfoldment, unfoldment, unfoldment. But mm-hmm. your mind is the one mm-hmm. that has to see it to the point that it says, "Ah, okay."
Yeah. Well, so you're actually we're actually liberating the mind. Everything else is
because the mind's got the problem.
Yeah, if it didn't have that confusion, then there wouldn't be any classes or anything.
Right.
Yeah, we wouldn't be here actually.
Yeah, we wouldn't be because that's right. That's because true. As long as there's a jiva. That's not Ishwara, there's limitation. If there's limitation, then there's going to be ajnanam.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that ajnanam has to be worked out. I mean, when you think about it, this is a miracle. Mm-hmm. You know, you as a jnani say, you're walking through yourself. You are Ishwara, and you are a jiva within Ishwara experiencing Ishwara, all of the while being your being. That's the condition of Ajnani. It's amazing.
Can you
say that one more time? No, because that was good. I like to hear that some more again.
Next class.
if you don't mind, just that one sentence.
Yeah.
So you are jiva.
Okay, so for the Ajnani, alright.
Yeah.
So reality is what? Yourself, mm-hmm. with Maya, manifests as this infinite creation. Mm-hmm. Yourself remaining the same. Mm-hmm. Right? You manifest as this entire creation. And have been doing from beginningless time. Atma remains the same. The creation has manifest cyclically from beginningless time. There's no beginning to it. Mm-hmm. So for the jivas, which are also infinite, they have been manifesting from beginningless time. Which means up until this point, you have had beginningless births. But now here you are, gaining knowledge. So now that you've gained knowledge, what do you recognize as a jiva walking through this creation? You recognize that this jiva is part and parcel of Ishwara, which is you, which is your manifest knowledge, and you are the self of the whole. So walking through that as a jiva, you understand yourself as the whole. I like to think of it, if you were to have the imagination of the meadow, and a character walking through the meadow gains knowledge, and all of a sudden that character walking through the meadow recognizes, I am the self who is the self of the entire meadow, which is my projection. So I mean, it's an amazing imagination. It's amazing knowledge.
And your imagination doesn't end.
What's the dissolution of the separation?
Yeah, total, right. Total dissolution of the separation because this jiva is part and parcel Ishwara. and the self, and you are the self of the, you are Ishwara. In fact, the knowledge really is not you are Brahman, it's you are Ishwara. Because you're, there's nothing, you are the whole. That's what
I,
it is.
You know, I think that the problem, or I just see it in my own experience, is, or I have been, I feel like I'm starting to resolve this a little, but it has been like, there's the Atma, and then there's Ishwara, right? So there's, it looks like there's a polarity of
Stuff, and that's what has to be resolved.
Polarity, duality.
Duality.
And then there's this attempt to kind of resolve this duality, but knowing, well, but I'm still here, like Edward was saying, you know. I'm just, so how does this really work? You know, so there is separation, but there isn't really separation. And it's true, it's actually, yes, my body and my senses sit here, and it's an illusion that I'm separate from the self, because I'm the self.
You are the self, and this body, mind, sense, organs is part of Ishwara.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and that's the beautiful thing about it.
It's beautiful, but odd also.
But what?
It needs to become odd.
Odd?
It needs to become an odd. But it will all, you always be odd.
No, but I see what creates a separation is like what you were saying before, it's a doubt. And yet, the moment you start to resolve the doubt, then there's this real shift that takes place. I mean, there's got to be something like
Yeah, there's a real shift. Because the real shift is that there's no... There's never any change in your being.
Mm-hmm.
And from the standpoint of you, of course there isn't, but from the standpoint of the ahankara, there isn't either. You are you, that's it. That means you could never say, I am sorrowful or I am anything except me. No matter what's going on. No matter even what the mind is doing or the sense organs or how... That's why Swamiji said, you know, years ago, he said, oh, I have a funny mind, it can do anything. Doesn't make any difference. Because there's no ajnanam there to make me into something that I'm not.
It kind of feels a little bit like, I just got this analogy, you know, it's like when you learn to drive a bicycle or so, you just have no clue. You cannot even imagine that you're actually going to be able to do this, right? And then in the moment, you, at some point, you can just...
Do it.
You just do it, actually, and you like you are that, you know. And it's like in a way, a certain way, it is like that, you know. It just feels so strange, you know. I'm gonna be everything, you know. How am I gonna be the self?
Because it's easier to ride a bicycle because you haven't always known to ride a bicycle. You've always been yourself. So.
Yeah, that's good.
But it's something like that. Mm. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, it's a weak kind of inner muscle that needs to be trained, you know, so that when it gains confidence, then the doubts, it just kind of vanish, and then
well,
it's just the light.
Well, the gaining of confidence comes from the vanishing of the doubts,
yeah.
The vanishing of the
yeah.
doubts comes from clarity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Good class,
Edward.
Yeah,
right. It was wonderful. This is why we come.
All right.